The Broughton Butcher by William Ash.
I thought I'd find you out here.
I never get tired of this scene. I've been here at least part of every summer since childhood, I guess.
It's a scene I'm getting to know all too well myself.
Are you so bored?
No.
You don't seem too sure.
I don't suppose I've been sure of not being bored since my childhood. But less when I'm with you, my dear, than in most circumstances.
You know, I remember thinking when we were first married that I'd have to learn to be just a little bored all the time myself for us to really hit it off. I had to give it up. I'm not like that. Up one minute, down the next. That's me. And when I do feel down, if I stand here and look out at the break...
Are you feeling down now?
No.
You don't seem too sure.
I'm learning to keep my feelings to myself. If you go around looking happy all over the place, somebody's sure to stick a foot out and trip you up.
Somebody like me?
Well, you do have a way of taking the wind out of my sails, France.
I just don't want you to be like those empty-headed female friends of yours. They all laugh too loud. It sets my teeth on edge.
It doesn't seem to keep you from being quite intimate with some of them.
That's just out of respect to you.
I wish out of respect to somebody, you'd be as intimate with me.
Oh, really? When have I ever failed to treat you properly?
You never fail in gallantry. To me, or anyone else for that matter, but... Love, France.
Love is a word constantly on the lips of American womanhood. And I don't believe they have the most remote idea of what it really means.
And do you, France?
I know enough about it to realize that it's the one thing that can't be pretended.
Or bought. Is that what you're saying? You can buy gallantry if you're as rich as the Gouldsbys, that is. But love? You can't buy love, can you?
No. I don't suppose you can.
And yet before we were married, you said you loved me.
Ungallant of me not to.
You meant that you loved my money.
I never pretended not to have a very healthy respect for it.
What makes you so sure I won't decide I've been cheated and put an end to our relationship?
I'm not sure. I can point to all the people we know, the Lodgers, the Hamiltons, the Deveres, the McIlvaineys, and ask you if there's one loving couple in the lot. You know there isn't. There may still be such a thing as love, but not in our circle. So what gives you the right to feel that you have been cheated?
Love is caring for another more than yourself. Selfish people are incapable of love. Some rich people are too selfish ever to know real love. And you're the most selfish person I know, France. I know I'm rich, but I still want love. Does that mean I really shouldn't have money?
It suggests to me a perfect arrangement. You can live as frugal a life as you please, just like a little sister of poverty, and I'll spend our money as it should be spent, supporting the lifestyle of a bon viveur with exquisite taste.
That's how we have been living. But let me tell you, there are other ways to get rid of my money than by letting you blow it on expensive gifts for whatever woman you happen to be courting.
What had you in mind? Big donations to that phony born-again Christian, Harold, whatever his name is?
You're contemptuous of him because you're a Catholic.
I'm jealous of him because there seems to be no limit to the amount of money he can wheedle out of rich...
Empty-headed females? Well, I wasn't thinking of Harold and his Church of Freedom. I was thinking of putting more money into the Gouldsby Foundation or anything. Handing out money to the down-and-outs. Anything.
You'd get your throat cut by one of them who'd grab the lot before you'd gone 10 yards. You're still trying to buy love. That's all your charity is, and it won't work.
I'm not like that. And I'm not willing to go on just as we are.
If only you'd agreed to make a settlement on me.
Oh, thank heavens Daddy talked me out of that.
It was a joke, Betty.
I don't find you funny anymore, France.
Oh, I can make do perfectly well on wit.
I'm going in.
I'll come with you. See one wave and you've seen them all, I always say.
Naturally, you'll just laugh off everything I've been saying.
But not without a sense of who has the last laugh.
Couldn't you change, France? Couldn't you keep me from feeling cheated?
I don't think you have been cheated. I certainly don't feel that I've cheated you.
And here's the news. Can't you see that if from my feelings of being...
The body of a woman has been found on the outskirts of Broughton.
I want to hear this.
The body, unclothed and horribly mutilated, is thought to have been a prostitute picked up in the center of town and then dumped from a car. The chief of police, Pat O'Dwyer, says it seems to be exactly like the case of the woman who was killed last month and whose body was also mutilated. asked if we might have something like the Boston Strangler on our hands, O'Dwyer said, let's not get things out of proportion. I assure the people of Broughton that the police are giving the case their full...
My God, what a country. These crimes seem to be occurring more and more frequently, and the strange thing is, bestiality in America always seems so unorganized.
That's a dreadful thing to say.
Brannigan, Cooper, in here.
Sergeant Cooper is still on patrol. You want him told to return to the station?
No. You come on in, Brannigan. You can tell Cooper about it later. Sit down, Mick. I told you this morning I want you to drop everything else and concentrate on these murders. As senior detective officer, you've got just one job. Find out who's killing these women and nail them good. I'm giving you Sergeant Cooper as your number one boy.
Being black, Bill Cooper wouldn't appreciate that description.
He knows I don't mean anything by it. Now, do you need anybody else? Do you think you can handle it?
Sure I can handle it. But cases like this are a bastard. Motiveless murders don't give you any idea where to start.
What have you done since the body was found this morning?
I'm just finishing my report.
Now, it's 5 o'clock. You better figure on coming into my office every day about this time and telling me straight what you've been doing and what you find out, so we can kick it around and see if we can't come up with some ideas. And what have you done so far?
Well, we carried out a thorough search of that whole area out by the turnpike to see if we could find a murder weapon. No luck, of course. Forensics says it's some kind of scalpel, which can not only be used for stabbing, but which can account for the very precise carve-up afterwards. Not just hacked about, but parts neatly severed as by some crazy surgeon. God, you should see what a mess was made of her. As far as can be made out, the weapon is the same as was used on the woman killed last month, which means that it's highly suitable for the kind of butchery this guy goes in for, and he'll be hanging on to it to use again.
That's right. If there wasn't any motive to kill some particular person, then there's no reason not to kill some other person, and maybe somebody after that.
The woman killed last month was a prostitute, too.
And this one?
Much the same. We're checking on her with other prostitutes, and with the people who hang out around the Paradise Bar, which is a kind of base for the unorganized prostitution which goes on in the slummier part of town.
So you think there's something in both women being prostitutes, some Jack the Ripper angle?
It could simply be that some guy has a thing about killing women. Prostitutes are the easiest kind to get at. There isn't a lot more to say yet.
Well, keep at it. I mean all the time, Mick. I want to bust this one, and I want us to do it ourselves. Before the station begins swarming with detectives from Boston and even New York, all come to lend a hand to those poor small-town cops who don't understand the kind of sophisticated crime you get in the big cities these days.
Maybe what we've got here is some metropolitan psychopath who's on a seafront holiday.
Well, even if he is, he's come to our town, and he deserves the hospitality of our police, hot and strong. And if we want to handle it, you know what it means, don't you? We got to keep it from getting played up by the press.
Sure, Chief.
That means nobody talks to reporters but me. And that includes that Steger guy. Has he been on to you yet?
No.
He will be, as soon as he knows you're in charge. And he'll know, all right. The story that you're in charge is probably already broken in the New York tabloid he's a stringer for. I mean it, Mick. You're to shut him right out of everything we're doing about these murders.
All right. He's out. Is that all?
That's all for now. What are you going to do next?
Tell Sergeant Cooper what you've been telling me.
And then?
Go home.
Now, that surprises me, Mick. I'd have thought you and Cooper would want to go nosing around the Paradise Bar, see what you can pick up, while the spore's still fresh.
Would you like to ring my wife and tell her I'm going to be late again?
Well, why can't you ring her?
She might believe it really is my job if you tell her. Have a pleasant night, Chief.
Well, all I want is for you to tell me something about her. You say you knew Mildred Purvis. Well, tell me about her. How old was she? Did she come from around here or anything?
If I tell you about Mildred, will it be in the papers?
Oh, yes. In the Broughton Bugle and perhaps maybe even in the New York Evening Post.
And will my name be there?
Of course. I'll give you full credit for any details. As told to our reporter by Flora Pickett.
Oh, I don't think I want my name to appear. He might come looking for me.
Right, there won't be any mention of your name, but I assure you, Flora, murderers don't kill people because they know something about the victim. It's only if they know something about the murderer that they're in trouble.
Oh, the whole thing is so terrible, I can't get over it. He seems to really hate people who, well, women like me. Tony, the one behind the bar, Tony says it may be some fellow who got a dose from one of us, and now he wants to...
That's very interesting. Tony ought to get in touch with the police. Chief O'Dwyer would probably put him in charge of the case. Now, if we could just get back to Mildred Purvis.
Some people get money for telling things to the newspapers.
If you give me any useful information, I'll see that you get some kind of a payment.
Shouldn't I be telling what I know to the police?
I don't think they'll give you money for any information, but by all means, tell them anything you've told me. Well, you haven't told me anything yet. Was Mildred Purvis native to these parts?
She wasn't born here, if that's what you mean, but hardly anybody lives where they were born, do they?
Well, I do, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
That's probably been my problem. What I was wondering was whether she had any relatives around here.
Relatives usually further off, and you hear from them every other Christmas, because it's only when you don't get a card from them that you remember you didn't send them your new address.
Uh-huh. Well, that's very interesting. Did she have any close friends apart from you?
Oh, I never said we were close friends.
Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mick.
I told you Bob Steger would be here. You know Sergeant Cooper?
Sure. Hello, Bill.
Hey, nice to see you, Bob. Hey,
don't tell me that's Flora Pickett.
All right, I won't. I'll let her tell you. You got all night with nothing better to do.
Oh.
Well, here you are. You wanted to give your information to the police, and my old friend Mick Brannigan, who was also born here, turns up pronto. Pull up a couple of chairs. I won't ask you to have a drink since you're on duty. Me, I'm not on duty unless I am drinking. I'm trying to get someone else drunk as well.
Oh, is that what you've been doing?
It takes a long time when the management serves you colored water, for which I pay the price of pink champagne. All right, Mick, she's all yours.
So, you knew Mildred Purvis?
Oh, yeah, I knew her. Oh, isn't it terrible what's happened? Do you know who did it yet?
Not yet. Did she come from around here?
She wasn't born here, if that's what you mean.
Oh, don't forget to tell them about the Christmas cards coming from relatives every other year.
Oh, please, Bob. Did you see her with anybody last night?
Well, that's what we're supposed to do, isn't it? Be with people. I mean, we're almost always with somebody, like me being here with you now.
I meant anybody you hadn't seen around here before. Anybody who looked peculiar or acted strange or was dressed unusual.
All the people around here are peculiar. They all dress funny. Everybody dresses funny these days.
We won't bother you anymore tonight. You're probably upset by what's happened.
Well, I'm scared. I'm not going back to my room tonight. A whole bunch of us are going to stay together.
Fine. Will you give your address to Sergeant Cooper?
Don't you want my address?
No, it's all right. The sergeant and I have a good relationship.
Well, Flora Pickett.
Pickett, is that with two T's? Right.
142 Oak Street.
Thank you. We'll get in touch with you if we need to.
Thanks. Bye.
Did you tell her not to tell us anything?
Oh, Mick. Why would I do a thing like that?
Because you got something useful from her you don't want anybody to know about till it appears in the papers under your byline. How did you get onto her before we did?
Because I'm a good detective. A lousy newspaper man, but good detective. Yeah, I tracked her down all right and then couldn't get a damn thing out of it worth writing up.
Have you got any other leads we ought to know about?
Well, there's a guy called Sam Miller who's about as close to a regular man friend as Mildred Purvis seems to have had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you must know about him.
No, I don't. Where does he hang out?
He has a room in that crummy hotel on Quincy Street. He's not there. He told the room clerk yesterday morning he had to go to Boston for a few days. He's not back yet.
Which could mean that he's got a pretty good alibi. Let Bill have any details you got on him.
Sure. Well, I take it that means we'll be working together on this one.
You take it wrong. O'Dwyer's specific instructions were to freeze you out cold as far as this case is concerned.
Of course, he couldn't know that at this stage I've got more I can give you than you have to give me. I'm sure if he knew that, he'd take a different line.
He wouldn't, you know. He's still furious about the bit of investigative journalism you did about the contracts for the new police station? Why did you have to suggest that he and the mayor were taking backhanders to help him decide who was offering the best deal?
Well, there was something screwy going on.
There always is, if it's anything to do with the Broaden City Council.
But when it came to the crunch, you didn't have any proof.
It's what's called preventive investigative journalism, Mick. By a courageous expose of what's all too likely to happen if it isn't happening already, you keep it from actually occurring. And it worked, didn't it? There hadn't been a breath of scandal about the erection of the new building ever since.
All I can say is that if you don't steer clear of this case, you're likely to become the victim of a bit of preventive detention carried out by Chief O'Dwyer himself.
Now, you know perfectly well that nothing on earth is going to keep me from grabbing hold of this chance with both hands. Just one more murder in this series is going to put Broughton, Massachusetts, on the front page of every paper in America. Here I am right on the spot. Since you can't stop me, Mick, you might as well work with me. Now, I've been of some help to you in the past, you know. And what O'Dwyer doesn't find out won't hurt him.
Only if you check out any major development with me before putting it in the Bugle, let alone phoning it through to the Evening Post. I don't want you triggering off in advance some trap we've set. What do you think about it so far? Is it going to be one of these bloody series of atrocities?
It looks like it. There's something funny about it. I don't know what it is yet. It's just a feeling that there's something peculiar about this one.
Two women murdered and then carefully sliced up like somebody carving a Christmas turkey, and you say there's something funny about it? Something peculiar? That's the whole point about these crazy killings. They just don't make any sense. They're all peculiar as hell.
No, I mean there's something that distinguishes these particular killings from others of the same crazy kind, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
I'll tell you one thing about it.
What's that, Bill?
I got money. It turns out to be a white boy that did it.
There is a certain amount of raping of white women by blacks, you know. Look, I'm not interested in vindicating mankind or anything like that. I just want to get a crazy murderer behind bars before he can kill anybody else so that I can get back to a normal life again.
If I handle this right, I may not have to go back to a normal life again ever. But apart from a steady job with the Evening News, the book of faction I'll produce will probably make me rich and famous.
Oh, you're romanticizing again. He's always been a hopeless romantic. When we were just kids, we sometimes used to see Betty Gouldsby, the Baroness von Staffel she is now, come into town. The Gouldsbys own that big mansion down by the seashore, and they used to come here every summer. Well, Bob got a crush on her, and he used to have these pipe dreams about her falling off the pier where their yacht was kept and him jumping in and saving her life. The joke of it is, Bob never could swim worth a damn.
Well, if I could imagine the beautiful Betty Gouldsby falling into the sea when I happened to be around, I could sure as hell imagine that I could swim well enough to save her. That's always been mixed trouble. A poverty-stricken imagination.
Well, that's why I've got a lovely wife and two kids, and Bob's still mooning about the Baroness von Staffel.
Thank you, Barnes. We'll have coffee in the drawing room in a few minutes.
So, you won't come to New York with me on Friday?
You know I'd rather stay here.
Without me?
I was coming here years before I met you, Franz.
You don't mind my going to New York?
Of course not.
I think this invitation to appear on the Larry Adams show could lead to something. I've always fancied myself as a bit of an actor, you know?
I can vouch for your acting ability. You certainly took me in.
Still on that, are we?
That's why I want to stay here. The sand and sea is so much a part of my secure childhood that they may help me come to terms with what I've got now. Or rather, what I haven't got.
I assure you, my dear, you've got all of me there is. There isn't any more. Under this superficial, pleasure-loving, old-world charm, there isn't any romantic prince waiting to be released by a kiss.
I know perfectly well you're not going to New York just to appear in some silly show.
I don't think you ought to refer to the Adams show as silly. That may be subversive.
It's an excuse for shacking up in the Ritz-Carlton with some woman or other. Probably somebody who's supposed to be one of my friends.
If that was the case, would I have invited you to come to New York with me?
You knew I wouldn't. Your affairs are bad enough without my actually having to be a witness.
We were both cheated. You thought you were getting a romantic Central European prince. I thought I was getting a wealthy, sophisticated American wife who would indulge me financially. Since we've both been cheated, why can't we just make the best of it? Why can't we, under cover of a public relationship that's still quite useful to us both, go our respective private ways?
You say we're in the same boat when it comes to being cheated. There's just one difference. You have to make the best of it. I don't. I can see what you get out of such an arrangement, France. But I can't see what's in it for me.
There's something else I want to say to you over coffee. I'll have a cognac.
Thank you, Barnes. That'll be all.
I had another reason for wanting you to come to New York with me. It's that third murder last night, just like the other two. I don't want to leave you here by yourself at this time.
Oh, good heavens, France. It's a terrible thing that's happening, but really I don't see what it's got to do with me. I mean, those women are all...
They're not sure the woman killed last night was a prostitute. In fact, they don't know who it was yet. In such cases, identification can't be easy.
This place is surrounded by a high fence, with a completely private beach, walled off at both ends, a watchman on patrol all night, and a dog as well.
The other night, when I was coming back late, I didn't see any sign of that guard, and a dog can be doped, you know.
Well, any place can be got into as far as that goes. But a homicidal maniac isn't going to go to all that trouble when there's a whole town full of women he can get at all too easily.
You wouldn't rather I stayed and didn't go to New York?
I know what you're like when you have to give up something you've set your heart on. And anyway, I don't see what good you'd be. If you want to put another man on guard outside the fence...
I'll do that, then.
And while you're in New York having a marvelous time at my expense, you'd better think about what I've been saying.
I can't not think about it, can I? Indeed, one of the reasons I want to appear on the Adams show is that I'd better begin to think about ways in which I begin to be a bit more self-supporting.
Living off wealthy women must be striking you as more precarious than you thought.
There's always the question of which will run out first, their money or my charm.
Didn't it bother any of the others that they were just one in a long succession?
They always thought they were the end of it. A man wants to be a woman's first love. A woman wants to be a man's last.
Well, it's been a long time since I thought I was the last where you're concerned.
We've already agreed that I'm incapable of love, except for my obsessive affair with Franz von Stoffel. What I really care about is money, and since you have plenty, I care about you. You could easily be the end of the succession, my dear.
I don't know why you're always so eager to get to the bottom line, the sum I paid for you and keep on paying. The article I bought doesn't seem to me much like what the label claimed.
There are no harmful additives, though.
I'm not so sure.
But suppose I do become an actor and begin endorsing products and all the rest of it. Wouldn't that mean that you were getting a better deal?
If you began to earn enough to live the way you want, and if you still stayed with me, I suppose that might make a difference.
Then watch me over the weekend. Tell me what you think. Some pretty important people in the film and theater world will be looking in, too.
I'll be watching, Franz.
Hey, Mick! Over here.
Oh, Bob!
I don't see why we have to meet in this place.
Well, it's safer for you. Anybody likely to know us has no business being here and won't mention seeing us to the chief. You know who the third woman was?
Yeah, it's worse than we thought.
Huh?
Her name's Sally Mottram. She was in her 20s, worked in a bank in Boston, was coming to Broughton for a few days with a girlfriend to get a bit of sun and eat some seafood. When the friend couldn't come, she came on her own to make use of the hotel reservation. Bill Cooper's in Boston now, checking up on her background. Apparently, she was still living at home, a perfectly normal family.
Well, you said it was worse than you thought. You mean whores are expendable?
I meant it's worse for any theories I was beginning to have. All prostitutes, or all committed at roughly monthly intervals. The Sam Miller lead fizzled out like every other lead I've tried to follow up. With a third killing in Carver, everything I thought was starting to form some kind of a pattern has been canceled out.
Let me be your pattern. There doesn't seem to be one. That's what I was saying about this. It's not fitting in with any of the murders I've ever heard about. The other thing is that they've all happened right here in Broughton.
Well, Boston Strangler's murders all took place in Boston.
Yeah, but this murder has a car. He's used to dump two of the bodies on the outskirts of town. Now, if he has a car, why didn't he use it to commit the crimes in different places, making it harder to know where to look for him?
Unless he's from somewhere else and wants us to think he lives in Broughton.
There's something kind of odd about all this.
Are you beginning to see some kind of a pattern?
I don't know. I just can't grab hold of it. What's Chief O'Dwyer making of it?
Well, as far as he's concerned, the whole thing's a plot to discredit him on the eve of retirement. He takes it quite personally. He keeps hounding the life out of us for letting him down. Once a day, he tells me I'm no longer in charge, and then 10 minutes later, realizing that there's nobody to carry the can if we fail, he puts me back in charge again. The other day, he came in waving a copy of the Bugle and hollering about that guy Steger who was knifing him in the back. I had to point out that the source of the material used in your article was his office.
I don't see how you've worked under an illiterate bully like O'Dwyer all these years.
All bosses are like that when you get down to it. You've just been too anarchic to work in any kind of an organization.
I suppose I can use the details about the third victim.
Sure. Here's a handout giving you all we know about her so far.
This is my world. Those lights along the shore. They look exactly the same as when I stood here just like this all those years ago. I wonder how many times I've walked just like this along the beach to that old jetty. Who is that? Is there somebody there? Oh. Who are you? What do you want? Oh, go away. Go away. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Oh, don't hurt me. Please. Please let me go. Let me go.
Goddamn dog! Get away! Get up! Get away! Get away!
Brannigan?
Yes, Chief?
It's 20 minutes after 5. What about my daily report?
I've been pretty busy.
At what? Not capturing the Broughton Butcher. In here. Everybody must think we've given him the freedom of the city.
I've just come from the hospital. There's been a guard on the intensive care room where she is since early this morning. Nobody's been allowed in even to look at her, except her husband. He got back from New York about noon and came straight to the hospital.
Uh-huh. She responded to all? Show any sign of recognizing him?
Nothing, not a flicker of an eyelash.
So where is he now?
Back at the Goldsby place. He'll wait there until the hospital says she's conscious. But they'll tell me first. I want to be there the moment she opens her eyes. This is our first chance to get a description of the murderer.
Just what sort of state is she in, anyway?
Well, the two stab wounds are serious. One of them nicked a lung, but not in themselves fatal. It's the deep coma she's been thrown into by shock that's worrying them. They don't know how long it'll last.
God damn it. Here we are trying to keep a low profile for our killer, and he goes and attacks the most prominent person in Broughton.
Well, if she can just tell us what he looks like when she comes to.
Yeah, but suppose she can't. It was dark. She was stabbed from behind. Maybe she didn't even see him.
Well, then we're right back where we started.
God, Mick. We gotta be further along than that. It's not that big a town. You ought to have something on the movements of every male in Broughton at the relevant time.
We just about have. But nothing much has come out of it. We don't even know if the murderer lives in Broughton.
So how did he know that the Baroness would be walking along the beach that night?
Well, he may have seen her there by chance, found some way in. If he was from around here, he'd have known about the guard patrolling the fence and about the dog. He'd never have tried it.
You say the dog was chained up?
It's very fierce with everyone but the Baroness. They got to be careful about letting it loose when any of the servants are in the grounds. Apparently, it broke free when the Baroness was attacked and drove her assailant off before he could complete the task of carving her up. There are several deep gashes on the dog that must have been made by the same weapon used in all the murders.
Uh-huh. Was the man badly bitten?
There was a bit of blood on the wall he climbed over to get away.
Any shreds of cloth, clothing, anything?
Nothing. And the blood belonged to a very ordinary group.
So we're just sitting on our asses waiting for the poor woman to come around.
Ah, that's not all we're doing. I haven't been at home all last week except for a few hours sleep each night. I've done everything I could think of. Fed every bit of information we had into the computer. My kids don't recognize me anymore. My wife's probably leaving me, and I sure as hell wouldn't blame her if she did. And if you want to put somebody else in charge and demote me, you go right ahead.
Okay, okay. Come on now, Rick. You're letting it get you down. I know you've been working hard at it, but... see, this one demands a bit more of us. That's all. You want me to ring your wife?
Oh, you better not. She'll bite your head off. She got it in for you, too. If that's all, I'll be on my way. Hey, I just thought of something.
It better be good.
Bill, come on. You drive. We're looking for Bob Steger.
What's he done?
Nothing yet. At least I hope he hasn't. We'll check the Paradise Bar first, see if he's there.
What about his apartment?
No, he's never there. We'll try that last.
You think he knows something?
No, it's not that. It's just that he's crazy. That might give him a lead to the crazy things that are happening, or it might mean he'll do something crazy himself. From the moment Betty von Stoffel was involved, I knew I'd better ride herd on Steger. He's bound to have some nutty idea about rushing to our rescue by exposing the identity of the Broughton Butcher.
And the two of them riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, something like that.
I like the guy, though.
Oh, so do I. He's been a friend of mine ever since high school. But he's still crazy. Stop here. That's his apartment.
But I just been explaining why I'm going to help you clear it up as quickly as possible. I'm personally involved now.
When we were talking about these murders the other night, you said that they seemed to you different somehow from other examples of a homicidal maniac going on the loose.
That's right.
Now, what did you mean by different?
Well, that's a feeling I had. I can't put it any clearer than that.
Did that attack on the Baroness fit in with that feeling?
Well, let's say that I wasn't as surprised as I ought to have been. It was not being surprised which made me realize that my feeling must have some validity.
Well, tell me about that feeling. I don't care how vague it is. I've got nothing to go on at all. This case hasn't been out of my mind one second for the past 2 weeks, and I'm still exactly nowhere.
Well, there's no way you can tell people about a feeling you have. You can tell them about an idea, but...
I'm not sure I'm not entitled to order you to give me some notion of what this feeling is.
Come on, Nick.
I think there's something you're not telling me, something that's connected with the fact that the last victim is personally known to you.
If there is anything to this impression I have, it's very likely that within the next couple of days you'll find a man's body. Maybe it'll wash up on the shore somewhere around here.
Will that mean that there won't be any more of these murders by the Broughton Butcher?
No. I think there's bound to be one more than now.
Well, I hope you've taken all this down, Bill. Right. I hope you haven't any ideas about leaving town, Bob.
Me? I like it here. That's why I never went off to the big city to make good like all the rest.
Me neither. The greater fools us, I sometimes think.
See you, Bob.
I'd like to speak to Baron von Stoffel, please. I tell him it's a friend of the Baroness. Hello, Baron von Stoffel. My name is Steger. Not that it should mean anything to you. I'm a journalist on the local paper. Now, wait a minute before you hang up. Of course, you wouldn't want to speak to a newspaper man at such a time, but this is different. Broughton feels a very special responsibility about what's happened, and let me assure you, no one here is going to rest until the Baroness's attacker is hunted down. He's made some mistakes, you know. In about an hour. Well, thank you, Baron.
Ah, Mr. Steger. Thank you, Mrs. Harris. Would you have some coffee brought into us? You had no difficulty at the gate?
No, I was allowed in immediately.
We've had to tighten up security, largely to keep out the newspaper people we didn't want to see. I think you'd be more comfortable in that chair. There are cigars if you smoke.
Well, what's the latest report on the Baroness?
No change, I'm afraid. I have been discussing with the hospital authorities the idea of moving her here as soon as her stab wounds have healed sufficiently.
Wouldn't that be dangerous?
No. A room upstairs can be fitted out like an intensive care unit. I think that here, within the sound of the sea she loves, she's more likely to regain consciousness.
I'd have thought myself she was better off staying in hospital, where every change in her condition can be monitored and proper action taken at once.
But then you don't know my wife, do you? No. What is it you think I ought to say for use in the... what did you say your paper is?
Bugle. The Broughton Bugle. You've been touched by the way the Baroness is still considered a Broughton girl, as it were, even though her life has naturally been lived largely on the international scene. You know how hard Police Chief Pat O'Dwyer is working to free Broughton from this horrible crime.
Is he?
Chief O'Dwyer is a big bag of hot air. He couldn't catch the Broughton Butcher in 100 years. Fortunately, the men in actual charge of the case are very good, very sharp.
I would naturally prefer to keep to myself my deep anxiety about my wife and my sense of horror that so terrible a thing should have happened to her. But when one lives such a public life as we do, silence on the score of one's feeling can so easily be interpreted as a lack of them. Has there been much in the local paper about the attack, about my wife's having actually been born here and so on?
Well, there hasn't been much because O'Dwyer's been making my editor play down the whole thing. I've been telling him to ignore O'Dwyer.
Is the Bugle the best place for what I want to say, then?
The editor's got no guts at all. But let's give him one more chance. I think he'll play ball on this story. Anyway, it'll certainly be used by the New York Evening News.
Won't that make Chief O'Dwyer angry?
Furious. He's caught me at it before. Let's see if he can catch me this time.
It's very difficult to know how to act when something like this happens in America. In other places, there are patterns of behavior, forms of speech that cover most of life's exigencies, according to the class one belongs to. But here, it always seems to be a case of making it up as you go along.
Oh, I don't know. I think that almost anywhere something like this would strain social conventions. I'd love to come to your thé dansant, Mrs. de Vere, but my wife has just been attacked by a homicidal maniac.
It may be something you can jest about. I've heard of the remarkable sang-froid of you journalists, but I am faced with a very real problem. I don't want to share with anyone my grief over what's happened to my wife or my anxiety about her recovery. At the same time, as I was saying before, I am aware that people like us are in the position of film stars or famous athletes. The public feels that they have a right to participate in our sorrows and pain, as well as in our successes and joy. That's only democratic.
Tell me, Baron von Stoffel, if your wife should die, would you inherit everything?
I have no idea. I refuse even to think of such an awful possibility. These sharp policemen you mentioned, do they have any suspicion of who's been committing these crimes?
They got a pretty good notion. Of course, they haven't got enough evidence to pounce yet.
Over the telephone, you said that the murderer had made certain mistakes.
Oh, yes, but I couldn't tell you what they were, could I?
If the police wanted to keep something like that secret, I'd have thought that a journalist was the last person they'd confide in.
Well, one of them's a real close friend of mine. He told me about certain mistakes he had spotted right away.
Oh, surely a madman must make lots of mistakes.
Now, don't you worry. They'll get the right man in the long run. They always do.
Unfortunately, by the nature of things, when they don't get the right man, we never know about it. Tell me, Mr. Steger, have you got any idea about who's carrying out these murders?
Well, it's not my job. I don't let the police dictate what I ought and ought not to write, and I don't try to solve their crimes for them. You know, it's an interesting fact. One of the largest proportions of murders committed in this country is that of wives by husbands.
Are you married, Mr. Steger?
No.
And what a very lucky woman. Do you know, you haven't once commiserated with me over what happened to my wife? I think that tells me all I need to know about why you came here, Mr. Steger.
Well, it's just that I...
When you leave, be sure you go straight out the drive. The guard on the gate will be expecting your car to pass through.
Oh, Mrs. Cooper?
Yes?
I'm a friend of Bill's. I want to see him, and I know he gets back around this time.
He does get back about this time.
You don't have to let me in the house. I don't mind waiting here on the porch. I just thought I ought to let you know who I was, who I am.
Well, who are you?
Oh, I'm Bob Steger. I'm a reporter on the Bugle.
Well, I guess you might as well come in and wait inside. You can sit there on the sofa.
Oh.
Do you want a cup of coffee or something?
No, I'll just wait here. Maybe you were busy with something.
I'm in the midst of getting dinner.
Well, you go right ahead. Yeah, I'll just look at this copy of the Bugle. Huh? I always like to see how many errors in my articles the sub missed.
Whoa, what are you doing here?
Oh, I wanted to see you on your own, Bill, without Mick.
You heard then what happened.
Well, it depends.
They found a man's body, just like he said. Hey, you want a drink?
Well, I'm on duty. Sure.
Yeah. He washed up on the coast about 10 miles north of here. And the thing about it was, his legs and one arm were lacerated as bit by a dog. He must be the man who attacked the Baroness and was driven off. Mick said to me that you're to be congratulated on your prediction. Naturally, he wants to know how you did it.
Mud in your eye. Could you tell me how the man died?
Just drowned, we guess. At least there were no marks on him except the dog bites.
Has he been recognized? Does he have a police record?
Not around here. We fed his descriptions and fingerprints and so forth into the national computer system. Yeah, we'll see what comes up. Why are you dodging Mick?
Well, I want to go to New York. I want to look up some records on European noble families, stuff like that. Mick made me promise to stay in town. I don't want to argue with him about letting me go, but I don't want to go off either without leaving word that I've gone and we'll be back in a day or so.
Well, since he told you to stay, I suppose I should tell you not to go.
Okay, Bill. I'll tell him you told me.
Can't what you're doing in New York wait until this case is over? I mean, it seems like it's just about wrapped up now.
Well, what I have to do up in New York has a direct bearing on the Broughton Butcher case, which is by no means over.
Yeah, but doesn't finding that body solve the mystery?
That's a part of it, but not the major part, not by a long ways.
Okay. Well, if you're set on going, I'm not about to try and keep you here physically.
Well, thanks, Bill. Oh, there's something else. Now, I don't think it'll come up before I get back, but just in case.
What's that?
Well, as soon as the Baroness is sufficiently recovered from her stab wounds, the Baron wants to move her out to the Gouldsby Mansion. Whether she's still in a coma or not, he says it can't be but good for her to be close to the sea. Well, now, look, don't let it happen, Bill. Don't let her be moved, you hear? In fact, it'd be a good idea to make sure there's always someone present whenever a visitor is allowed in to look at her, whoever the visitor may be.
You mean even her husband?
Yes.
That's very interesting. I've thought several times, but the slightest hint of it, and the fellows at the station all laugh their heads off.
Until we got some evidence of some kind, they'll go on laughing their heads off.
You've seen him, huh?
I was out there last night, and I can tell you this. If there is anything to what you and I have been thinking, that's the scariest guy in the world.
Did you meet my wife, Ilona?
Oh, I introduced myself when I came in. She's busy getting dinner ready for you.
Why don't you stay and eat with us?
I couldn't barge in that way.
Oh, look, it's no trouble. Plenty of room and plenty of food.
No, yeah.
Of course you're going to stay. There is just one thing, though.
Oh, what's that?
I don't want any carved-up corpses at my dinner table.
You want a drink, honey?
You know I don't drink that bourbon stuff. I might have a glass of wine.
I was interested in what you were saying the other day, Bob. Are there more of these sex crimes being committed, or do we just hear about them a lot more? I mean, sex crimes against little children now. We didn't used to hear about them so much. Or is it like you were saying, that splashing these things all over the newspapers and dwelling on them in a gloating kind of way is making them seem to happen a whole lot more?
Well, that's what I think. There's the same kind of link between the degree of obsession with obscenity and the frequency of sex murders.
But I still don't know what can be done about all these sex crimes.
Well, you two could stop talking about them for a start. You were just saying it's dwelling on them that makes them happen. Yeah,
but, honey, it's our job to be concerned about them.
Not in the house. Take some time off. It makes me sick just to think about our local maniac running around butchering women that way. It's the kind of thing that just shouldn't happen. Least of all in a little New England town.
Between the turnpike and the seashore, the woman's body, like the bodies of the first three victims, was unclothed and horribly mutilated. This is the fifth attack by the man known as the Gordon Butcher. So far, only one woman, Baroness von Stoffel, has survived these murderous assaults. It is thought that in her case, a dog in the grounds of the old Goodsby place drove off her assailant before he could complete his
ritual. Shut that goddamn radio off. All day long, the Broughton Butcher gets pushed down my throat. I sure as hell don't have to listen to it in here.
So, Bob Steger was right about there being another murder as well. I was certain that the man who washed up on shore was the Broughton Butcher, and there wouldn't be any more murders. And now this.
I know. I saw Steger yesterday, and he told me that the man we found on the beach was part of it, but not the main part of it.
You saw Steger yesterday? I went round to his place this morning, but he wasn't there. He hasn't been at the Bugle office either. I wonder where he's got to.
Yeah, I wonder where he's at myself.
Now, this case is driving me nuts. Every time I think I'm beginning to see a bit of light, some new fact comes up behind me and knocks me flat. With this fifth woman, we seem to be back where we were with prostitutes as victims. Just like at the beginning. In fact, that's exactly how it feels. Just as if someone was saying, ah, you didn't do very well that time, so the whole thing is starting up all over again for you to have another go.
Steger seems to be saying that if there was another murder, it would probably be the last.
Ah, Steger says. What is he, some kind of local oracle?
Look, come on, he's been right about everything so far.
And there's one sure way to be right about everything in connection with some crime.
Now, what in the hell do you mean by that?
Oh, I don't know, Bill. This case is getting me down, that's all. Bob Steger's all right, but he can be a goddamn nuisance sometimes. He acts as though this case belongs to him in some way, just because he used to have a crush on Betty Gouldsby.
Why the hell are you two hanging around here? Has that last woman been identified yet?
Name's Ethel Loring. She was a friend of Mildred Purvis, who was the second woman killed. They all hung out around the Paradise Bar.
Uh-huh. Well, there must be something you ought to be doing. What about the stiff that washed up on the beach?
We're still waiting for something to come in on him from general police files. But now it looks as though he couldn't have had anything to do with our murders. He was already dead when the last one took place. What looked like dog bites must just be a coincidence.
There's got to be something you can be doing instead of hanging around the station. The Broughton Butcher ain't going to come in here and give himself up, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, well, before you go, come into my office. There's something I got to show you. Okay. See this spool of recording tape here? Came in the afternoon mail.
Was there a note with it or something?
Nothing. It was mailed in the center of town and collected the first thing this morning. Here's the envelope, see? Chief Pat O'Dwyer, Central Police Station. Printed. To disguise the handwriting, maybe. Put it on, will you, Mick? I never could make that damn thing work.
It was probably put in a mailbox not 100 yards from here. So, whoever it was, didn't want to run the chance of bumping into one of us while he was pushing it through the slot in the door downstairs.
Chief O'Dwyer's a big bag of hot air. He couldn't catch the Broughton Butcher in 100 years. But let's give him one more chance. This is the very night. Let's see if he can catch me this time.
What bastard?
Quiet, Chief.
I think I've heard that voice before.
I know I have.
Me too. What in the hell is he playing
at? It's Bob Steger, your favorite reporter.
That son of a bitch. He's been out to get me ever since that so-called building scandal. He tried to implicate me and fell flat on his face. Hey, play the tape again.
Chief O'Dwyer's a big bag of hot air. He couldn't catch the Broughton Butcher in 100 years. But let's give him one more chance. This is the very night. Let's see if he can catch me this time.
There's your murderer, right there. He says so himself.
Oh, come on, Chief. If he was the one, he wouldn't send us a tape like that. Not when he knew his voice was bound to be recognized.
But we're dealing with a madman. You don't know what he might do.
But Bill and I have both seen a lot of him these last few days. I tell you, he's perfectly sane.
That's right.
I thought there was something funny about that guy, Steger. Always trying to get the dirt on the mayor or somebody on the town council or me even. And always failing. He had a chip on his shoulder as big as a house. He hated his whole town. And this is his nutty idea of revenge.
Oh, it just doesn't make sense.
God damn it! I keep telling you, no madman's actions is going to make sense.
Well, what do you think, Bill?
I can't figure it out. I thought at first it was some scheme he had for getting the murderer to give himself away, but I can't see how it's supposed to work.
Hey, instead of cluttering up my office discussing it like it was some subject in a college debating society, why in the hell don't you get over to that apartment of his and give it a thorough search?
Come on, Bill.
And before you go, show me how to turn this thing on.
You wind the tape back like this, and then you just push this button here. Not this one, Chief. That wipes the tape clean.
All right. Now get out of here.
What do you really think about that tape, Mick? I've got an idea that Steger is trying to tell us something, and we ain't getting the message.
I don't know what to think. This whole case is like a mad maze I don't think I'll ever get out of. Every time I seem to pick up a clue, it only leads me deeper into the labyrinth.
You know he thinks Baron von Stoffel is involved.
Oh, he was bound to, wasn't he? As soon as something happened to Betty von Stoffel. Poor old Steger. Love to think it was a wicked European aristocrat murdering for her money a nice American girl. I consider that one myself. Suppose you wanted to get rid of a wife and there was a series of sex murders going on in the neighborhood. Why not kill your wife and make it look like one more murder in that series?
Why not indeed?
Yeah, but it won't work. Forensic is positive the weapon used on the Baroness was exactly the same as has been used in the other cases. And how, on the spur of the moment, would he have got someone else to carry out the murder for him while he was in New York appearing on that television show? And what has the tape Steger sent to the chief got to do with any theory of the Baron's guilt? I give up. I don't know what Steger's up to.
Here we are. I'll park in the driveway. We're not going to be here that long.
Come on, come on, come on. No answer.
Look, I'd better tell you. He told me yesterday that he was going to New York.
He what? But I said he was to stay in town.
I know. He said that he said there was something that he had to look up, and he didn't want to get into a hassle with you about it, so he told me instead.
You should have ordered him to stay here.
I did. Oh.
You're the caretaker? We're police, and we want to have a look at Mr. Steger's apartment. Can you let us in?
It ain't that big. Shouldn't take us long.
One thing, you'll never know we've been here. God, it couldn't be untidier than it is. You look in the bedroom.
Gotcha.
After that, we'll do the kitchen. Make ourselves some coffee.
God, Mick, come here.
Looks like a sleeping bag.
I opened the closet door and it fell out. Look inside.
Ah, jeez. It's stiff with dried blood and some not so dry.
God, what a terrible smell. This is what must have been used to carry the bodies around without getting blood all over the place.
There's some bloody rags up here. They're wrapped around something. Here it is, Mick. The knife or scalpel or whatever.
Bob.
Hello, Alona. I just got back from New York. I wanted to see Bill, but I don't think it's a good idea for me to go to the station. Chief O'Dwyer isn't exactly a fan of mine. Can I wait for Bill here?
Of course. Come on in. You want a coffee or something?
No, thanks. Don't let me keep you from doing anything you ought to be getting on with.
Is that being thoughtful? Or just a masculine feeling that there must always be something a woman in a house ought to be doing?
Well, Alona, I live on my own, and I know what it is to have to keep a place neat and tidy.
How was New York?
Big, but I found out what I wanted. That's what I want to tell Bill about.
I think I hear him coming now.
You know, if he goes on finding us here together like this...
Bill's pretty broad-minded, as long as it never holds up his dinner. Oh, here he is.
What are you doing here? Just a minute, okay?
What's the matter, Bill? Maybe he's not as broad-minded as you thought.
What is the matter, honey?
Hello, Mick. He's here. Here at my house. Yeah, we'll be right here waiting for you.
Well, Mick's coming here. Well, that's good. I can tell him at the same time.
Have you been to your apartment yet?
No, I came straight here from the railroad station.
Well, Bob, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but you're under arrest. Mick's coming over here so we can take you in.
Well, he's not broad-minded at all. He's a man having an innocent visit with his wife and promptly arrest him.
And you honestly don't know what this is all about? What about the tape you sent to Chief O'Dwyer?
What tape? Since when have I started selling things to O'Dwyer?
I better leave the questions until we get down to the station.
You mean this isn't some kind of a joke?
It's not a joke.
Don't I have anything to say about your coming in and arresting a guest of mine right in my own front room?
Our front room. I'll explain it to you later, honey.
Look, can I know what I'm being arrested for?
Murder.
Anyone I know?
Mildred Purvis, Ethel Loring, among others, and for maliciously wounding Baroness Van Stoffel.
Oh. Well, at least I won't be locked up long. As soon as Betty Gouldsby regains consciousness, she'll tell you I didn't attack her.
Look, Baroness Van Stoffel regained consciousness this morning. She said it was very dark that night, she was attacked from behind, and she never even saw the assailant. She couldn't possibly identify him.
I don't believe any of this.
Neither do I.
Look, I'm not in a position to say whether I believe it or not.
Hey, you, guard. Anybody on duty around here?
What do you want?
I want my shaving kit and the clean shirt for my apartment. I want to see my lawyer. I want to worry with one Lieutenant Brannigan, and I want some hot coffee, not necessarily in that order.
Who is your lawyer?
I haven't got one, but I know I'm entitled to see him.
Lieutenant Brannigan is in the chief of police office. I told you 5 minutes ago.
How about my coffee, then?
I'll see what I can do. Yeah. Lieutenant Brannigan wants you brought up to the interval room.
Come in, Bob. Sit there.
I suppose O'Dwyer's been giving you last-minute instructions on how to beat a confession out of me.
I don't think you understand how serious this is.
No, I know it's serious.
Do you know that the murder weapon and a blood-stained sleeping bag were found in your apartment?
I haven't been in my apartment for 2 days. Did O'Dwyer plant them there?
Baroness Van Stoffel has recovered consciousness and her wounds are healing. And her husband wants to move her out to the mansion where she'll be much more comfortable.
No. For God's sake, Mick.
Hold on. I didn't say it was going to happen yet. What grounds have we got for refusing?
He's tried to kill her once and just wants the opportunity to finish the job.
Have you one scrap of evidence?
I have now. The planting of the murder weapon and the bedroll or whatever it was in my apartment is the final proof as far as I'm concerned.
But what about us? We can't do anything on the basis of some private conviction of yours. And don't think the idea of the Baron's killing his wife for her money never crossed my mind. When it came to working out how he could take advantage of the crazy killings to make his wife's death look like one of them...
Now you're pushing the thing wrong, Mick. It wasn't a question of fitting his wife's murder to a series of killings being carried out by some maniac. No. He started out with having a man who would do that job for him and then planned the whole series of murders around that. Look, let's say he's beginning to have difficulties with his wife and there's the possibility that she might get rid of him or at least cut him off in her will.
Well, he has to do something about her, but he's obviously the first person who's going to be suspected. He alone has a motive for doing her in. But if there were a series of completely motiveless murders and her death could be made to look like one of them, and if at the same time he could establish a foolproof alibi for himself on the night she was killed, well, he might never come under suspicion at all.
As he nearly didn't.
It was that alibi that first made me wonder. It was too good. Being seen by millions of people on a live television show in New York at the very moment his wife was being carved up in Broughton. Ever since you arrested me, I've been trying to think back to what kind of an alibi I could come up with for each of the five attacks. And I'll be damned if I've been able to remember anything that would stand up in court.
Do you mean to say the Baron could embark on a scheme like that, killing and mutilating women he picked up on the streets of Broughton just to make sure of inheriting his wife's fortune?
I remember, it's a very big fortune. That must have been about to slip out of his hands. Also, he must have known that apparently motiveless murders are the hardest to solve. The Baron knew exactly when he was going to stop. When his wife was killed, he killed the hired assassin and let it be thought that the dead man had been responsible for all the killings. The perfect crime.
Why didn't he let the weapon that had just been used remain on the dead man's body? So that we would have thought the man who washed up on the shore was the mass murderer.
Two reasons. The first was the fact that the one vital murder the Baron had not carried out himself, that of his wife, had not succeeded. She was still alive. If the series of murders ended with the botched attempt on his wife, it was bound to start arousing suspicions that this murder attempt might be different from the others. He needed one more motiveless murder to take the emphasis off that one genuinely motivated murder and make it look like all the others in the series. But there was an even more important reason why he didn't continue with his original plan.
Oh, what was that?
Me. After you and Bill Cooper questioned me in my apartment, I went out to the Goldsby place and saw the Baron.
You had no right to do that. I told Cooper it was just the sort of thing you might get up to.
I was lucky I did. I let him know I suspected him, and he proved I was right by planting that stuff on me while I was in New York. See, by making all the evidence point at me, it weakened any accusation I leveled at him. Made it look as though I was blaming someone else just to get out of trouble myself.
Well, and what about the tape you sent to O'Dwyer? That's what made us search your apartment.
Well, I tell you, I don't know anything about any tape.
Oh, cut it out, Bob. I'm doing everything I can to keep you from being treated like any other murder suspect, but you don't help much.
I don't help much? I've solved your whole case for you. I'm not even offered a cup of coffee. Why hasn't Bill Cooper joined you in your inquisition? Weren't you two working on this together? I suspect it's because you know he's on my side.
Bill's still trying to get some kind of a line on that guy that washed up on the shore.
Well, if he was easy to trace, or if he had a lot of connections, he'd have been useless to the Baron. I suspect he was some down-and-outer the Baron picked up from the gutter and offered a lot of money for one dirty job.
Right, well, now listen to this.
Chief O'Dwyer's a big bag of hot air. He couldn't catch the Broughton Butcher in 100 years. But let's give him one more chance. This is the very night. Let's see if he can catch me this time.
Well, I'm damned.
Do you deny that that's your voice?
No, of course it's my voice. And I recognize some of the words, too. I said them that night at the Goldsby place. Now, the Baron put me in a particular chair in the drawing room. He must have had it rigged so that my voice would be recorded, and then all he had to do was stitch together enough phrases out of context to sound like one of those boastful messages crazy murderers taunt the police with.
Well, maybe you'll stop sounding off about Chief O'Dwyer all over the place. Well, there's a kind of justice in it, I suppose.
Justice? What do you people around here know about justice? Can't you see that this is the final proof? In recording what I said that night and sending the tape here, he identifies himself as the one who put the murder weapon in my apartment.
Well, what I still don't see is how he could do it. To murder 5 women and mutilate their bodies. Could you do it? Can you even imagine yourself doing it?
No. That's what bothered me. That's when I got the idea he might be a crazy madman himself. So I went off to New York to look up the von Stoffel family in various books on the European peerage. And I tell you, Mick, madness runs through the von Stoffels like some families have a tendency to run to fat.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, a great-uncle of his was the commandant of a concentration camp in Silesia, which had one of the worst records for experimenting on human beings. I got it all written down and typed out. I'll give you some copies. Well, I guess that clears it all up. 9 o'clock. I'll have an early night.
Well, you can certainly have an early night. Right here.
You mean you're not going to release me?
I can't release you, Bob. Not until the charge against you is dropped.
Well, get hold of O'Dwyer and tell him it's being dropped.
The chief's not here. He's gone. And even if he were here, he wouldn't let you go.
You mean you're going to hold a man in jail you know is innocent? Don't you believe my account of what happened?
I do, as a matter of fact. But what evidence is there? All the evidence we have points to you being the killer.
That's ridiculous. You mean to say that even when you know who carried out a particular crime, if the evidence doesn't support you, that there's nothing you can do about
it? Bob, usually if you know who committed a crime, you can find the evidence to prove it. But what have we got against the Baron? The fact that you say, and I believe you, that he was the one who planted those things in your apartment. The fact that you say, and I believe you, that he had to be the one who concocted that tape sent to the chief. But we can't prove either of those things. It's just the word of the man who's been incriminated against the word of a man who so far has not attracted the slightest suspicion. He's a very cunning man, our Baron, and he's been lucky, too. Except for the dog breaking loose. Of course, when someone simply kills the first woman he happens to find on her own at night, it is a matter of luck if there should be enough evidence to enable the police to catch him. And now that there aren't going to be any more of those random, motiveless murders, we're not going to get any more evidence than we have now.
Someone else is going to be killed, though, unless you stop him. His poor wife. If he'd had his way and got her moved out to the mansion, some fatal accident would have overtaken her already.
That's true. But how long are we going to be able to keep her out of his hands if we can't prove what he's been up to?
Couldn't we tell her what we know to be the case?
She might not believe us. And besides, have we the right to make the poor woman in her present state responsible for her own defense?
Does O'Dwyer really think I killed all those women?
I doubt it. Keeping you under lock and key may be just spite. Not that you haven't gone out of your way to provoke him. I don't think for a moment that if you came to trial, the case against you would stand up. But getting you off the hook isn't the problem.
It doesn't seem so inconsiderable to me.
Anyway, Bill and I will be doing everything we can to turn up some real evidence.
Don't let him get his filthy hands on Betty.
So I'll let them take you back to your cell.
Oh, great. Really pays to have old friends on the police force.
To tell you the truth, Bob, I wouldn't be too happy about having you out there on your own. Not when the Baron is perfectly aware that you're the one person who knows just what he's done.
So I can consider myself to be in protective custody?
Something like that.
Hey, Bill Cooper. It's about time somebody showed up. You know how long I've been locked up down here? 17 hours. I've counted every one of them. The food's terrible, and you haven't even had the consideration to arrest some reasonably amusing person to keep me company. As jails go, this place doesn't even rate 1 star.
Well, it's your own fault, Bob. If you hadn't spent years making a personal enemy of Chief O'Dwyer, it might have been easier to get you out.
Oh, so at last he's convinced of my innocence?
Not at all. But he thinks that if we keep you under surveillance, you'll lead us to even more incriminating evidence. Hey, guard! You can unlock the door. Here's the release order.
Oh, and I want my shoes and the coat and my suit. I suppose it was thought that it would keep me from escaping, since I wouldn't want to appear on the street in my shirt sleeves.
We take the shoes away, because we had a guy hang himself here once with his shoelaces.
I'm not at all surprised.
Here are your shoes. You can get your coat upstairs at the desk.
And then I'm free to go?
Free as a bird.
I want to see Baron von Stoffel. I know reporters aren't being admitted, but I think you'll see me. Tell him it's Bob Steger of the Bugle.
Ah, come in, Mr. Steger. Have a seat.
Yeah, not that chair, if you don't mind. I'll sit here on the sofa. Or better still, I'll stand. I'm not going to be here long.
Would you like a drink? I've some of your favorite bourbon here.
Why not? Well, it must have been a big surprise for you when I turned up here.
Not very. I heard on the lunchtime news that you'd been released from jail. I knew one of the first things you'd do would be to come and see me here.
Yeah. You know why?
I have a pretty good idea.
Here. I want to try to stop you from doing anything to Betty, since the police seem powerless to protect her.
How absurd.
You're pretending you're not a threat to her?
I'm saying that you have nothing to bargain with.
Well, that's not so. I wouldn't have been allowed in here at all if I had nothing to bargain with. As long as I know all about you and you know I know all about you, I have something to bargain with.
What have you come here to propose?
Well, in the first instance, that you drop your request to move your wife from the hospital and bring her here.
Why should I do that?
Because if you don't, I shall insist on telling her everything I know about you. In her present state, she shouldn't be subjected to such an experience, but unless you stop trying to move her, I have no alternative.
But she won't believe you, Mr. Steger, any more than the police have believed you. They're not convinced that you committed all those murders. I never intended that they should be, only that they should suspect you, and through that suspicion be led down a great many dead ends quite unconnected with me.
You see, Mr. Steger, it was part of my plan from the start that if I did something really quite incredible, like setting about a wild psychopathic spree in the sanest way possible for a completely rational end, people wouldn't believe it, because people couldn't possibly conceive of being able to do something like that themselves. It was a philosophical problem for me, like the old question of whether it is possible to commit a completely purposeless act. Was it possible to commit a crime people wouldn't believe could be committed?
I believed it.
Well, then, a crime that all the people who mattered wouldn't believe had been committed, even when some lone individual was mad enough to suspect it. Your situation amuses me very much. The person who knows the truth about something but can't make anyone else believe him and eventually gets burned at the stake as a heretic.
Yeah, I'll tell you something else I know. That you're as mad as a hatter. Oh, yes. I've been looking up your family records, and there's always been madness in your family. Good many relatives of yours were closely involved with the Nazis, too. Now, you may think you're intelligent enough and clever enough to pretend to be mad in order to achieve a sane result. I say your sanity is a pretense, and it breaks down whenever life doesn't give you what you want. What you want, and also what you think you have a right to, just because in your madness you strike yourself as being so supremely intelligent.
Everything you say has the effect of making me appreciate my genius all the more. What could be more satisfying than to have someone who thinks he's perfectly sane going down on his knees to someone who thinks he's mad to pray for the life of a woman who could never, not in his wildest dreams, ever belong to the likes of him?
I don't care if you take some perverted pleasure in my appeal or not. I beg you, leave her there in hospital to get well. Don't bring her back to this place she's loved all her life to finish her off in some accident. You say I'm the only one who knows the full extent of your crimes. Well, if you'll just go off somewhere and leave her alone, I'll stop trying to persuade people of your guilt.
Since you've tried already and failed so miserably, that's not much of a bargaining position. Your proposal is ridiculous. I have done what had to be done to secure a fortune. A fortune no one else in the world had the taste to spend so judiciously. Only to be cheated of it by one bit of bad luck. You think I'm going to forgo it now? I have waded through blood to get to my goal, and nothing is ever going to wash that blood away. Should I give up what I have already paid for, then? You talk like a fool. You are a fool for coming here. What's to keep me from doing away with the one person in full possession of all the facts of my great exploits?
No, you can't kill me. Not without proving to the world that what I've been saying about you is true. You'd be crazy to kill me.
But isn't that just what you've been arguing, that I am crazy?
Maybe there's another reason you won't kill me. It's only just occurred to me that I'm very valuable to you. Oh, it must have been galling for you to have come so near to pulling off the perfect crime and for no one to know about it. That was why you were glad to receive me here that first night and were so pleased to let me in today. I'm the only one in the world with whom you can gloat over your achievement.
That is true, but it's a pleasure I will have to sacrifice when it gets too dangerous. That may be right now. In fact, everything is working out today just as I planned.
It's one aspect of your madness that you can really believe that anything that happens, anything people do, is all part of some great design of yours.
You think so? Let me tell you, I knew you would be released today because they wouldn't be finally convinced that you were the mass murderer. I knew the first thing you'd do would be to come here, so I got ready to welcome you with a little drink, a special drink, which I see you've almost finished. You're already feeling a bit muzzy and drowsy. We'll have to sit down in a minute, and about a quarter of an hour after that, you'll be out cold. Then I'll take you out to sea in the motorboat at the end of the pier and drop you several miles offshore. Your body will drift onto the beach like that of the down-at-heels dope fiend I hired to kill my wife. Another mark on it. Just another unexplained drowning.
Oh, God. I feel... I'll get you for this, you bastard.
There's nothing you can do. You're already too weak. Sit down. Now... You've got another 10 minutes or so to admire my cleverness, and that's the last thing you're going to be aware of in this life.
If I could just...
Oh, oh, freeze! I said freeze!
Oh, thank God, Braddock,
okay,
you arrived just in time.
We've been recording the entire dialogue in A Van Beyond the Wall. We took a leaf out of his book. Stay still, Baron.
I've been drugged.
Don't worry, they'll pump you out when we get you to the hospital.
And as for you, Baron, you're right. It's hard for ordinary people to imagine that anyone could cold-bloodedly do to those women what you did. But they might believe it when it comes from your own lips.
You won't take me...
Watch him, he's putting something in his mouth! He's dead. Must have been a cyanide capsule.
That figures. You did a very good job, Bob. Hey, Bob. Bob?
Bob's out cold. Let's get him to the hospital.
I mean, we should have told him about rigging up his coat that way and that we're hiding out in the van.
We'd never have got such a good performance out of him. When he comes to, we'll applaud loud and enthusiastically. Baroness?
Lieutenant Brannigan.
How are you feeling now?
Much better. I can still hardly believe it. That someone so close to you could be such a monster. I'm so glad that you've brought the nightmare to an end.
There is something I wanted to mention once you were sufficiently recovered.
Mm-hmm.
Just one person was responsible for unmasking the Broughton Butcher. He did a remarkable piece of detective work to discover just what had happened and who was behind all the horrors. And besides, when none of us believed him, he risked his life out of concern for what might happen to you. I'm talking about Bob Steger.
Is he that reporter on the Bugle? I like him. He always makes me laugh.
As a matter of fact, he had a crush on you when we were all children together. Yeah, we used to see you sometimes in the summer, when a servant might bring you into the drugstore to have a chocolate soda, or your mother might take you shopping with her.
Really? Mm-hmm. Will you tell Bob Steger that he's to call on me?
Sure, I'll tell him.
Oh, the sea. The sea. The waves come tumbling in, and when they recede, the sand is perfectly smooth again. As if there'd never been anything to disfigure the shore. Oh, how I love the sea.
In The Broughton Butcher, the cast was Bob Steger, Nigel Anthony, Mick Brannigan, Simon Treves, Baron Franz von Stoffel, Geoffrey Whitehead, and Baroness Betty von Stoffel, Helena Breck. Pat O'Dwyer, Vincent Brimble, Bill Cooper, Rico Ross, Ilona Cooper, Naomi Werther, Flora Pickett, Susan Sheridan, and the radio announcer, Tara Dominic. The play was written by William Ash and directed by Jerry Jones.